Canceling plans because your knees hurt? Nope, not anymore. Get to Joint Relief Institute. Safe, fast, immediate pain relief covered by Medicare. Call 708-888-0000 as in zero pain.
Welcome back. Happy Father's Day to everyone. And, you know, for some fathers, it may not be as happy as it should be. And it could be very sad if you're going through a divorce, or maybe you're estranged from the family unit or post-divorce. And if you're having trouble maintaining relationships with your children or trying to navigate the new family dynamic, listen in, because we have one of the most experienced and compassionate professionals in the field on the show with us for the last half hour. Dr. Alan Childs is a licensed clinical psychologist. He's a member of the Illinois Psychological Association, American Psychological Association. He has extensive experience teaching. He appears as an expert in divorce court hearings. He performs custody evaluations, and he has great expertise in the area of parental alienation. Welcome to the show, Dr. Childs. How are you?
I'm great today, and happy Father's Day to all the fathers out there. Thank you for having me, Karen.
And thank you for taking time out of your day. I know you're with your father right now, and you're taking a little hiatus to talk to us on the radio. Happy Father's Day to you and to your father.
Thank you so much.
Now, you deal with people going through this process, and, you know, 50% or so of all people will be divorced or split up at some point in the future. I think the current stats are still. My first question relates generally to children. What does the current literature say about how children do in the event of a divorce?
That's a great question, Karen. Typically, research does show that separation and divorce can cause adjustment issues in children and adolescents. Unfortunately, ranging from academic difficulties to disruptive behaviors, and a lot of times a depressed mood, anxiety. And in the mental health community, what happens is we generally see the majority of the issues coming from parenting problems, family conflict, alienation, and actually parents using the children as a means to kind of dominate their narrative over the other parent. External influences such as social standing, education, and cultural norms can also play a huge part in how the children will fare and how this will play out.
You know, and you probably see the bad cases, because in the good cases, maybe the children are so well adjusted they don't need the Alan Childs of the world. And I agree. And what I see doing family law is that when parents are in conflict, whether that's during or after, that to me is the issue that really gets to the children, because I think children can be very resilient, but when they see their parents fighting and continuing to fight, I think that is so very harmful. Is that what you're seeing?
Yeah, absolutely. I think a lot of the factors that affect a child's well-being during and after the process is, what I see, Karen, is some of the most important factors are parental engagement, collaborative co-parenting, and just keeping the legal conversation separate from the parental conversations. I mean, parents really need to be present with their children. They need to really, how I see it, is really show a stability and consistency with the kids. They need to really affirm and support the other parent's relationship with the children. What happens is, what I see is that children have really gotten their lives disrupted, and so being consistent and present, in my professional clinical opinion, is really key to helping them feel safe and secure. So if your romantic relationship has not survived, it is important that you separate kind of those emotions kind of from the parental relationship, so that the children are feeling secure in that they don't have to pick sides, which I think is often a real issue of conflict and fear that loving one parent will potentially disappoint or upset the other.
Well, that's just such a hard thing, and it can be done subtly by parents. And, you know, the words that you used about encouraging a relationship, that's actually in our written law. When the judge gets to decide, you know, where does the child spend time, with dads or moms, who makes decisions, how does this work, what are holidays, all of those factors that are contained in the law, the most important one, according to many judges, is, do you as a parent support the relationship with the child and the other parent? Even if you don't like that parent, right? Buy him the Father's Day gift. You know, make sure he goes to this parenting time on time. Make sure you speak highly of that other parent, even if you don't feel like it. And that's really important for for the court system, at least.
Absolutely.
Go ahead.
Yes, go ahead. I'm sorry.
I was going to say, I was just looking at some statistics that fathers are awarded full custody in about 18 to 20% of cases. And there's different websites that have slightly different, you know, statistics on this. And that the average parent, the average father receives about 35% of parenting time. What is your feeling about parenting schedules and all this talk? There's a lot of talk about there should be a presumption of 50-50 parenting time. What are your thoughts on that, Dr. Childs?
Well, I think in my opinion, it's kind of unspoken. I think a lot of times in cases, there are times when there are parents who have different schedules. I mean, there's parents who do work like full time. Both parents might work full time. One parent might work less time. And I think in this day and age, I think a parent really needs to kind of focus on their availability. And again, the consistency, predictability of being able to be with a child at consistent and predictable times. That's my opinion.
Do you think that the courts give dads the short end of the stick?
I think, in my opinion, they have recently gotten out of that. I think lately, I think the idea of co-parenting has gotten much better, because I think there's a situation now where parents are, you know, there's not the traditional single-income families where this dynamic exists, where where it's not about the quantity of the time the father gets, but rather the quality. And the process is a lengthy one, and during that time, parenting time should be used to create those bonds. Just because they did not do the majority of the care does not mean they were not capable. And so showing up, listening, engaging during parenting time is very important. These fathers are likely just as capable as the mothers, in my opinion, but just have not had the opportunity, as the parental responsibilities were paved out early in the relationship. So I can use the example, just because one parent has changed 50 diapers and another only 2, it does not mean that one is capable of doing the task. So my professional clinical opinion is, loving your children and showing up for them is not about the amount of time you spend with them, but more what you do in that time, the quality.
I think that's really important, because when clients come to me and say, I demand 50-50, what are you talking about? Are you talking about when they're sleeping? Are you talking about weekend time? Are you talking about weekday time? You know, and all of those have different responsibilities for parents. You know, you're doing homework. You're schlepping kids from event to event. You're on the weekends, you're bringing them to a water park. So those are all different kinds of quality time with your children. And that's really what you should be looking toward, not the numbers, but really the quality and, you know, of what's going to happen during that time.
Right. And it's interesting, because you've talked about this before. It warrants me mentioning again that fathers and mothers have equal rights under the law, which you are very strong in your opinion, clinical and your professional opinion. Is there no presumption that one parent is a better caretaker or should even have more time with their children? And I think in the past there was an unspoken perspective that moms were the more nurturing and empathetic parent. However, the tides have kind of changed. And I believe the courts in society now recognize more that fathers are just as empathetic and supportive and nurturing as mothers, and there is no longer the preferred gender preference, but rather the courts are now taking a more objective look at many things, including really listening to the needs and preferences of the children, with the implementation of guardian ad litems and the increased utilization of therapists, reunification therapists, individual therapists, mediation, co-parenting, in the family court systems to give input on the well-being of the children.
Because the last person who should be making a decision for your children is a government agent, namely the judge. You know, because that judge may have 400 cases on her docket. And, you know, with these other professionals, like, as you said, mediators, therapists, guardians ad litem, those people can get into the family dynamic a little bit better. It's not a perfect system, believe me. And I know you know that, Dr. Childs.
Yes.
But it's preferable to have people at least to have some knowledge of your family rather than making a decision in a court of law. Dr. Alan Childs is with us here. He is a licensed clinical psychologist. Let's go on a break. But how can people connect with you, Dr. Childs?
They can connect with me on my direct office line, which would be area code 708-430-5993. Or they can email me at drachilds at thehotmail.com.
You're not going to do better when it comes to smart, experienced, and compassionate. We'll be back in a minute. Welcome back and happy Father's Day. We're here with Dr. Alan Childs. He is a licensed clinical psychologist. He deals with issues of people going through divorces who have been divorced and children in the middle. Dr. Childs, let's talk a little bit about if you have a spouse who's angry with you and remains angry with you, and you know whether it's because of something you did or didn't do, or someone is just an angry and bitter person. How do you get them to tone it down for the sake of the kids? How do you advise somebody to try to get that person to stop the contentious nature of the conversations in front of the children?
That's a beautiful question, Karen. Oftentimes it goes back to kind of reminding the parents that before they became even parents or even partners, you know, they chose each other because they saw something worthwhile in that person. And they chose to have children with them because they believed they would be a loving and caring parent. So just because they're unable to make a romantic relationship work does not mean that they could have a worthwhile, capable, and be a loving parent that doesn't still exist. So what we often try to do is explain to the parents that their feelings are valid, but something that should be expressed and worked through with an individual therapist and not really projected onto their children. I often, my associate Lisa Kuhn and I, who Lisa is a brilliant reunification therapist as well, is remind them that they are the role models that will determine the types of relationships their children will have down the road. And they really, really pay attention to that, typically. And do they want their children to think it's acceptable to speak negatively or disrespectfully to their partners or turn to allow their partners to do that to them? So obviously, Karen, we want them to have happy and healthy relationships, those that it's their job as parents to continue to model what that looks like to them, even if they're not together.
Absolutely. It's the roadmap for the rest of their relationship life.
Yes.
And so let's just say that you and your spouse have decided to go separate ways. What do you suggest you do for your children to tell them what's going to happen? How does it get presented to them? And what are the words you should use to reassure them that everything is going to be okay?
That's a great question. Most importantly is children need to understand that it's not their fault and they're not part of that process and they haven't triggered the breakdown of the relationship. And what's important is parents need to express to their children how much they truly love them and care about them, and that what's best in the best interest for the relationship and the environment they live in, that mom and dad are always going to be their parents, and they're never going to pull the children into the middle and create an unhealthy environment for them. They always want to be there for them. But most importantly, making sure that their children have a really safe place where they can then express their feelings and emotions without fear of retribution or disappointing their parents. So in my clinical opinion is making sure that their children's voice is heard and that they are listening to what their children are expressing is very important. So to answer your question in summary, is both parents supporting open and honest communication in the home is vital.
At what point does a child need therapy? So they're divorcing. What are the signs of a child who's crying out for therapy? Or do you say that almost any child going through a family divorce could use some therapy?
Yeah, typically what I try to recommend is there are different forms of therapy. There's play therapy, you know, there's art therapy, there's psychotherapy, there's, you know, psychodrama. I think in each situation, depending on where the children are kind of developmentally, where they're at academically, I think they're identified, you know, observations as far as how they're doing in school, if they're showing signs of anxiety, difficulty sleeping, eating, you know, crying frequently, you know, feeling what I call a lot what goes on clinically is children feel separation anxiety a lot, especially younger children, you know, before their teens. You know, they have developed this bond with both parents, and that's why I think it's really important that that bond and that attachment really continue. I'm a real strong, you know, professional in terms of really encouraging parents to maintain the stability and consistency in the environment. And if that can be maintained and children can predict, like, parenting time and when they're going to see dad or when they're going to be with mom, or, you know, continue their general lifestyle as before, prior to the separation divorce. That's most important.
We only have a few minutes, and this is a big, big topic and one that you and I have discussed many times, and that's parental alienation. Can you quickly define what that is and when it arises and how bad it is for children?
Absolutely. Parental alienation is a very severe situation where one parent, who tends to have very negative feelings or even to the extreme form of hatred or dislike, is kind of projected onto the children or child. And they end up immersing themselves into those emotions. So if a mom doesn't like dad and really presents that to the child, then the child starts to feel the same way and is programmed in that situation. It's a very severe and concerning situation. As a clinical psychologist, I'm very much an advocate against parent alienation, obviously. And that's where we really try to foster, as the court would say, Karen, is foster that relationship between the child and the other parent. If you don't do that, to me, it's really a very serious and detrimental process to the child and can really impair the relationship with either parent and affect their ability to have that bond and that attachment. It could actually break it. And it's very difficult to correct, and it takes time. It's correctable, but it's serious. And I know the courts more and more are very looking at that very seriously. Because it's very much a danger to the child or children.
Long term, we have 1 minute. Just one word of advice to, let's just say you're estranged from your child because of parental alienation and you haven't spoken to your child won't return calls. Just give me a quick answer to, look, what should you be doing? Should you continue your communications? How do you rectify this horrible problem?
Absolutely. What I tell all my parents who are going through this is you must continue the bond and attachment the best you can. It's reaching out, texting, calling, sending cards, continuing to send gifts, letting the child know, I am there for you and I love you no matter what. A child needs to feel that and experience that. Because we don't know what the child or children are feeling on the other end. So by you showing yourself how much you love and care and celebrate a bond between yourself and the child, especially in Father's Day here, like Father's Day is meant to be a celebration of the bond between fathers and their children. And that's that day filled with appreciation, connection, and love. That needs to continue.
Keep the door open. Because you never know what will trigger an estranged child, you know? And sometimes having their own children or getting married and a new spouse comes in and says, what's the problem? You never know. But if you close the door by getting angry at the child, then that door can never be opened again, in my view. So.
Absolutely.
Thank you so much for joining us today on a very important day for fathers. Dr. Alan Childs, how can people reach you?
They can reach me at 708-430-5993, or they can email me at drachilds@hotmail.com.
Thank you so much again for your time, and happy Father's Day to you and to everybody out there.
I'm honored, and thank you so much, Karen.
All right, everyone have a great week, and we'll be on the air next week on Sunday.